I've been doing this job in the ministry for a number of years now, and part of doing my job is taking weddings. And years ago, 20, 30 years ago, weddings were relatively simple things. People turned up to the wedding, and the usher standing on the door asked them, you know, are you with the bride or the groom? And they would usher them, you know, to the left side or the right side, depending whether they were with the bride or the groom. These days, the chances are that either or both of the parents of the bride or groom are married, remarried themselves, which makes things a little bit more complicated. You know, who sits next to whom? And who walks down the aisle with who? And who gives who away? And which grandparents go where? And who do we have to keep apart? Yeah. And the whole reason, of course, is that weddings have got much more complex because family life has got an awful lot more complex. There was an article in Newsweek magazine a little while ago about families, and it led off with the story of this woman who had I think she had seven children, and four of them were biological children from two different marriages. Two of them were foster children, and one was a stepson from a third marriage which had failed, where the son of her previous husband had chosen to stay with her when the marriage failed. And then one day, if you can keep with the story, one day she met the maternal grandmother of her stepson, and this maternal grandmother introduced her to some of her friends by saying, this is my ex-son-in-law's ex-wife. And the fellow who wrote the story up said, imagine trying to find a birthday card for someone like that. We're having another census next month in New Zealand, and the last census 5 years ago found out that 4 out of 5 of us live as part of a family. And the interesting thing is, if you ask people, name 3 really important things in your life, according to what I read, one survey, 95% of us said family or family relationships were right up there as one of the 3 most important things in our lives. Now, as Raywin was saying in the introduction, we may be part of a 2-parent family or a 1-parent family or a blended family or whatever, but there's one thing for sure that everyone wants, and that is a healthy family. And we want it because in New Zealand today there are just so many unhealthy families. And I guess most of us have watched on the television, month after month, is this terrible, this appalling saga of battered and killed children. And you wonder, what are we doing to our kids? What kind of unhealthiness has permeated our family life that this kind of thing is occurring in one of the countries in the world with one of the best styles of living that you could find? And of course, we all know this is just the tip of an iceberg. And beyond the kids that make the headlines, these appalling headlines, there are homes that are ripped apart with pain and confusion and this kind of thing. So what I want to do this morning and over the next few weeks is ask the question, well, where can we find help? You know, how can you actually find out how to have a healthy family? If it's true that all of us want to have a healthy family, how do you figure out how to have one? Well, a couple of years ago, Marge and I were in Israel. We'd been invited over there, and we had a few weeks there. And there's one thing about the Jews that that I've always deeply appreciated, and that's the quality of their family life. You know, here's a race of people who have survived for over 2,000 years without a homeland. And they were scattered all over the world. And as the commentators on this say, there's only one thing that has held the Jewish people together for over 2,000 years, and it's the quality of their family life. And when we look at the Bible, we can understand why. Because basically this is what they've had. They've had the Bible and their family life. And the Bible tells us about how to have a family life. And I want to read a passage out of the Bible. And it's from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6. And this is what it says. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. Now, about 1500 years after Moses got this commandment, Jesus was asked about which is the most important commandment, and he mentioned it was this one. The interesting thing about if this is the most important commandment that has ever been given to humanity, it's actually given in the context of family life. There's one thing you really need to know, that's what they're saying, is that there's one God, and you need to love him with all your heart and your soul and your mind and your strength and this kind of thing. And this is the most important thing, but it's given to us in the context of our families. Now you may think, well, hang on a minute, you know, I'm not too sure about this love God thing, you know, from where I'm coming from and my spiritual, I've just got a whole lot of questions about this, and you need to hear this, and that's fair enough, and a number of you will have. You know, how do you impart this kind of value to your kids if you're not too sure about it at all? Is it even worth worrying about? I want to suggest to you actually that it is. Because our kids deserve an ultimate understanding of life. When our kids come to us and they say, hey, what's it all about? Who am I? Where did I come from? Where did the world come from? You know, is there any meaning? Is there any purpose in life? It's sure not really helpful to shrug our shoulders and say, wow, that's a big question and I have no idea of the answer. Go and ask Grandma. She might know. And one of the most important things that we can ever give our kids is an understanding of the ultimate values behind the universe. And this is what the Bible's telling us. There's one God and you're to love him with all your soul and your heart and soul and your mind and your strength. And then we whip over into the New Testament where Jesus was teaching. And they'd asked him, someone had come up to him and asked him, you know, which is the most important commandment? And this is what he said. This is from Mark's Gospel. The most important one, answered Jesus, is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this. Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. So here it is. Now what I want to suggest this morning is that this is the ultimate vision for a family. There's two, to build a really healthy family in every dimension, in a physical, social and spiritual dimension, there's two primary elements. One is to love God and the other one is to love each other like crazy. If you want ultimately a really healthy family, here are the foundational principles of it. Here is the vision that can inspire your family. Love God and love each other. So I've got three things I want to mention this morning. The first one is this, that a healthy family has a vision. Now my wife Marge is a kind of jigsaw nut. You know, she likes doing jigsaws. I haven't got the patience to do jigsaws, especially not the ones she does. And at Christmas, our son figured he'd got mum beat and he bought her a 2,000 piece jigsaw. I mean, it was real, for serious jigsaw people. This was it. And it was huge. It was huge. We had to move everything off the living room table. I mean, there was no room for people to eat meals or anything for some weeks, actually. And we ate at the coffee table. And it was huge. And it was complicated. I mean, it was a sort of medieval scene of a woman queen knighting some bloke in chain mail and armor and all this kind of stuff. You imagine all the chain mail on a jigsaw. And there were 2,000 pieces. And they were tiny. I mean, so Marge sat down and she worked on this and with amazing patience, and I moved bits around and I got two bits together once. I felt so good. And actually, once I think I got four bits together and I just swelled with pride. I thought, man, I can do this. Anyway, then we had to go away on holiday. But there was one thing I noticed, that while Marge was doing this stuff, that she kept on pulling out this picture. Because if you've got a jigsaw and it's all confusing, you need a vision, you need a picture of how's it supposed to be, all right? And well, the jigsaw got maybe two-thirds done, and then we had to pack our bags and go off on holiday, and our daughter and her husband moved into our place. And they moved in under strict instructions that they would have finished the jigsaw. And so we gathered that while we were away, over the 3 weeks we were away, everyone who turned up at our place had to sit down at the table and, So the jigsaw was finished when Mum came home from holiday, and here it was. Amazing. Some of you may feel that life's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. You've got bits and pieces, but you'd have to say, hey man, I feel confused about life. And what you need is you need a picture. You need a vision. Hey, this is what life can be like. And this is what the Bible gives us. It gives us a picture. What it says is so simple. Love God with all your heart and love each other like crazy. And that's it. That's God's vision for a healthy family. And the amazing thing is, it works. You know, and this is not some kind of theory that's come down from a self-help guru in the last couple of months. You know, he's just written a new book and it's going to be replaced in a couple of years when he thinks of another new idea. Hey, this stuff's been around for 3,500 years from the time of Moses. This thing works, you know. And over centuries, millions of people have put these principles into place. And what do they find? They find, hey, this stuff works. How strange. You can find a vision on which you can build a family. And maybe you're struggling. You think, man, I don't have it together. Well, that's okay. Maybe I'm just sort of overwhelmed by the demands and the pressures of family life. Maybe you've got a wayward child or a rebellious teenager. And that's hard. Maybe your life's under financial pressure. Maybe you've got a kind of contentious spirit in your families. A lot of families have this. You know, where there's quarreling and yelling at each other and there's blaming, you know, it's her fault, it's his fault. And there's walking out and slamming doors and all this kind of stuff. And you say, hey, that's the spirit in my family. It's kind of contentious. Well, I got news for you. Stephen Covey has written a book called The 7 Habits of Effective Families. And he makes an interesting comment. He says that good families are off track 90% of the time. That's reassuring, isn't it? I find that really reassuring, you know. I would have found it really even more reassuring a few years ago. Good families are off track 90% of the time. And what he does, he uses an illustration of an aircraft. You know, when you get on a flight and the pilot, before you get on the plane, the pilot has a flight plan. And this flight plan is like a vision, really. It's like, here's the picture of where we want to go. And we want to go there. So you sit in the plane, you put your belt on, and the plane takes off. But do you know 90% of the time, the plane is not doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's not where it's supposed to be at any given time. Now, I know for some of you it's nervous enough getting into a plane at the best of times without being told this, but because you see, when the plane takes off, there's all sorts of other factors come into play, like wind and rain and turbulence and air traffic and human error. And the astonishing thing, the absolutely amazing thing, is that almost in the overwhelming, almost in every case, the pilot actually manages to get the plane finally down where it's supposed to be at the end of the ride. Now, how does he do that? Well, he's got a vision. He's got a picture of how it's to be, and he keeps in touch. And all the way through the flight, the pilot's getting feedback. And he's getting feedback from his instruments on the plane, and he's getting feedback from navigation fixes they have, certain points on the earth. They get feedback from other control towers they fly over who feed them, and they get feedback from other aircraft in their vicinity. They keep in touch with each other, and they talk. Now, here's the message. You need two things. You need a vision. And the Bible gives us this. Love God and love each other. Love each other just like you love yourself. So that's the vision. But then you've got to keep in touch. Because you see, the whole thing about God is it's not used. A lot of people think it's like it's a history lesson. God is kind of way there in the past and he gave us these noble values. And we should do our real best to keep by these values. Well, it isn't quite like that. Because you see, what God says is that we can actually keep in touch with him. That God actually loves us humans so much that he sent his son into the world to live amongst us. That was Jesus. And that Jesus is alive now. And he's with us. If we reach out to him, he will be with us. If we say to him, I want to follow you, Jesus, he will accept us. It's like Steve was saying in the story. I mean, he'd messed up his life. And he reached out to Jesus. And did Jesus say to him, well, Steve Wiggins, huh, failed twice at marriage, eh? Huh, what a loser. Out. So what do you say to him? You heard Steve tell a story from his heart. That isn't what happened. And amazingly, you just feel overwhelmed by this thing called grace, that God actually loves us like we are. He doesn't actually wait for us to clean up our act. He says, hey, come to me. Trust me. Put your faith in me. I'll accept you and I'll love you and I'll be with you. So you see, we've got these two things. We've got the vision, love God and love others like you love yourself. That's the vision. And then you've got God's promise that he'll be with us. You stay in touch like the pilot in the plane. He's got the vision. He's got the flight plan where he wants to get there. But he's not just left with that. Otherwise, not too many planes would come down where they're supposed to come down. But he keeps in touch with the control tower and everything else. And this is what God says. He'll give us the vision, and then he'll give us his presence. That's the first principle. Here's the second one. Healthy family has a vision. The second point is that the healthy family has a blueprint. And we need a blueprint. That's a blueprint is kind of how to get there. Here's the vision's the big picture. So you can have a big picture, but then you've got to know, how do you actually get there, you know, to loving God and loving each other and all this nice, warm stuff. See, in the past, I reckon that a few decades ago, it was actually a lot easier to raise a family than it is now. And you know why? Because a few generations back, the surrounding society was an ally in this task of raising a family. And the surrounding society sent out very family-friendly messages. And there was a huge encouragement from the surrounding society to put your energy into building healthy families. And the values that came from the surrounding society, hey, it's not like that anymore. All you need to do is watch one episode of Sex and the City to realize, hey, there are not values being shown on this program that are going to help me build a healthy family. You go out, baby, and you get all the sex you can in whatever way you can. No parents, hopefully. Well, unfortunately, some do, but any parent wanting a healthy family is not really going to want their kids picking up these kind of values on which to build their life. And so all these messages are coming from the surrounding society. I read a fascinating study that on the American elementary school system, it's like our primary school, that in 1940, 60 years ago, the biggest problem was children speaking in class, breaking into queues, and chewing gum. Biggest behavioral problem in the schools. You know the biggest problems now? Rape and violence and suicide. That's the change that 60 years has made. That is astonishing. And so these are the values, this is the climate in which we try our hardest to grow a healthy family. Whether it's a two-person family, a husband and wife, or a parent and a child, or whether there's more people in the family. These are the values in which this is the age in which we try to bring up our kids. I was reading a magazine article recently about, it was just called What Do You Do When a Stranger Says Hello? And it was an article for kids. And I thought back to my parents' generation, and I thought then if a stranger came up to you and said hello, what would they say? They'd say hello back again. But we all know you can't do that anymore. Because there are predators out there. There are evil people. And who say hello to little children, not with good intent at all. And so we have to teach our kids all the stuff that we prefer them not to know. There are predators out there, and they have evil designs after children. But you know the saddest thing, is that most of the damage done to children is not done by evil predators who we don't know. It's actually done by family members, members of the extended family. And that is the horrendous thing. And that is the pain of this unhealthy family that we're living with. What we need a kind of moral blueprint to teach our children. So how do you go about doing that? There's a man named Jean Piaget who was a great behavioral psychologist back last century, the 20th century. And he was sort of the leading authority in this field. And he developed a test that he did with kids about measuring moral understanding. And he tells a story. He said, here's a little fella, and mum and dad have said to him, now when we go out, don't you try and get cookies out of the jar. So this little fella waits till mum and dad go out, and what does he do? He scarpers up, puts his finger in the jar, pulls out a cookie, knocks the jar off the shelf and breaks it. That's scene number one. Scene number two, Piaget's story, this little fella, he's helping mum and dad set the table for tea. There are important guests coming for tea, and mum's given him the very best glasses to put out on the table. Poor little fella falls over, complete accident, smashes the glasses. Now here's the test. This is test your moral development. You could try it. They do it with kids, but you try it. Which was worse? Was the little boy, when he broke the cookie jar, was that the worst thing to do, or was when he broke the three expensive glasses? Now the problem is that if you're morally developed, Piaget says, you understand the first one was worst because, you know, the little fella did what he was told not to do. And hey, the second one was an accident. You know. But here's the problem, you see. This is what we teach our kids. The first one, well, the cookie jar gets broken, but you can get another one at the warehouse and it's no big problem. And so mum or dad only erupt mildly. But the second one, hey, those were four expensive glasses that were going to be put out to impress the guests. And so mum and dad go ballistic. So what's the message that's conveyed to the kids? It's morally wrong when you upset mum and dad. Not it's morally wrong when you disobey. And the point these guys were getting out of the story is that we have kids growing up who are morally confused because we send our kids the wrong signals all the time. We react to our kids and we get angry with them. Now we beat them up when we get upset. And the whole point of this thing, this is Piaget thing, if teaching kids moral development, you've got to help them understand right and wrong. And you've got to help them understand that if you say to them, hey, that is wrong, then they have to understand. But who can do that but a parent? Who can do that but someone who loves the kids? And so now we've got a fellow writing a book just recently called Why Johnny Can't Tell Right From Wrong, because the signals from the parents are so confused. What's wrong is what upsets me. And we have to give our kids some kind of blueprint, some kind of understanding. And this is where Jesus comes into it, because he gives us the blueprint. Now he said we're to love our neighbor like we love ourselves. He said that we're to do to others what we would have others do for us. But it's not enough just to have that out there, but Jesus gives us a moral compass inside, that when we break his commandments, we go aside from him, we sense this, and we get to feel God's pain about wrongdoing and stuff. That's why we desperately need Jesus in our lives. That's the second thing. A healthy family has a blueprint. So the first thing is a healthy family has a vision, and then a healthy family has a blueprint. And the third thing is that a healthy family has good relationships. Stephen Covey says this, that within every one of us is a deep longing for home, for the kind of rich, loving relationships that only a family can give. You know, our biggest problem, one of our biggest problems today, is that we're all so busy. And we don't have time to invest in children's lives. I found out this week there's actually a word for it. It's called the sunset syndrome. You come home from work and you're just exhausted, absolutely exhausted. And you're tired and you're harassed, and the time that you could give into building a healthy relationships with wife and with children and so on to make a healthy family, we're just simply too exhausted because life is beating us up. And there was a book came out last year called Ask the Children. And it was one of these longitudinal studies they do. They did it over 5 years where they get a group of kids and they follow them over 5 years and ask them a whole lot of questions and this kind of thing. And in this study, one of the things they did is they asked the kids, if you had one wish, if you could change the way mum and dad's work affects your life, what would you do? Now, the folks who put the study together figured out that the answer would be the kids would say, we want more time with mum and dad. But the interesting thing was, overwhelmingly, the kids didn't say that. You know what they said? We want mum and dad to earn more money. Now, the compilers of the survey got sort of a bit upset at this point because they thought, is this actually true that a whole generation of parents are teaching their kids the only thing that matters is money? So they talked to the kids and they found out this wasn't actually what they were thinking. What they were seeing was that mum and dad came home from work and they're tired and exhausted and frustrated and, you know, they felt beat up and this kind of stuff. This is a child's way of thinking. They thought if mum or dad could earn more money, then they wouldn't be so harassed and upset. And so they put down more money because they figured out if they got more money, because they're always complaining they don't have enough money, if they got more money, then I'd see more of mum and dad, because it turned out what they wanted was not mum and dad's time, they actually wanted mum and dad. And they figured out, just the way a child thinks, that if they got more money, then they'd have more time for me. Of course, we all know what happens. If we get more money, having more money is like drinking salt water. You know, the more you get, the more thirsty you become, the more you want. And little kids don't understand this, of course, but we grown-ups understand this stuff, that the more money you want, the more money you actually get, just the more you want. But to a kid's mind, this is what it seemed like. What steps are you going to take? It's a little practical thing. If a healthy family is one that has good relationships, what are some steps you could take in your family life to create better relationships? There's John Ortberg. He tells a story about a family with teenage kids that he knows. And they were talking together one day about how should they use Sundays. Because you see in the Bible it says that there's one day in seven is to be a special day. It's just to be other days. You know, don't work on this day and do good stuff for each other and give thanks to God and this kind of thing. So this family with teenage kids, they sat around and they say, well, how can we make Sunday a kind of special day? And someone came up in the family, came up with this astonishing idea. They said, hey, let's have a rule in our home that on Sundays there's no criticism. Now, what a fantastic way to celebrate Sunday. And the family all agreed, teenage kids. They agreed, yeah, this is how we're going to celebrate Sunday in our house. No criticism. So they gave each other a real hard time. You know, as soon as someone starts criticizing, others jump on their back. This is Sunday. We don't do that around here. This is our house. We've made this rule. Well, after a few months went by, they began to find a real interesting thing happened. And that is, the friends of their teenage kids started showing up at their house on Sundays. Not that anyone had told them the new rule in the family. The kids started showing up just because this family was a nice place to hang out on Sundays. They'd taken a step, very simple step. Now, you may want to do that, not want to do that, but there may be something else you could do, and you could say, hey, here's one simple step that I can take. Here's some homework for you. Why don't you go home and talk about it, maybe in your family, whatever the configuration of your family is, and say, hey, what's one simple step we could take to build better relationships in our family? Just one step. And maybe only one step you need. And you might be surprised at what happens. Now, just to finish off, I just want to say this, that building a healthy family is real hard work. Real hard work. In my view, this is hard work that it is the most important thing we could ever give our lives to. For most of us, our career ends up becoming the most important thing in our lives. But you know, it's not just the Bible says this. I know this is true. But I know it's hard work. And most of us are not really making a really good fist of it. And I look back at raising our kids, and the thing is, it's over so quickly. And it seems such hard work, and you never seem to see anything for it. Yeah. I don't know if you heard the story of the Chinese bamboo tree. It's a strange plant, the Chinese bamboo tree. You can plant one in your garden, apparently. And for 4 years after you've planted it, you never see anything. It's just this little stump of a tree sitting there. But during 4 years where you see nothing, it's growing this vast infrastructure, this root system, nourishment down into the soil. And in the fifth year, a Chinese bamboo tree grows 80 feet in the air. It's actually Stephen Covey tells the story. And he says, he reckons raising a family is like that. You spend years and years and years, and it's just hard work, and you see nothing. And you seem to go backwards sometimes. And but there comes a time when suddenly, if you really are committed to building your family on healthy principles, if you say, I want a healthy family, if you are really committed to do this, and I think it's about the greatest calling you've got in your whole life, if you're really committed to doing this, there'll come a day where, like the bamboo tree, this suddenly there'll be this astonishing plant looking you in the face, and you'll think, how did this happen? You know, that was my experience. I mean, we had the long, dark teenage years, and it goes on forever, of which there is no end, you know. And yet there came a day when we came out the other side of this. And here were these three adults who mean more to me, along with their mother, than anyone else in the world. And it's astonishing the way they've turned out. It's fantastic. And I think, how did that happen? Yeah. Well, next week I want to talk about that. Raising kids, staying sane. So let's all pray together. I want to pray a real simple prayer, because some of you will be like the bit about the jigsaw I was saying, and you'll feel your family life, it's a bit of a mess and it's all over, and it's all over the place, and I just want to pray this real simple prayer where we're asking God to come into your family life. And if you're allowed to pray this, you just pray along in your heart with me. Honest, I'd have to admit that I've kind of pushed you out of my life. And I suppose in one sense my life is a bit like a box with a whole lot of jigsaw bits in it. And but Lord, this morning I just want to say to you from my heart, as best I can, that I want to invite you into my life. I want to ask you to take me as I am. And I want to pray for you to clean up the mess and redirect my life. And I want to say to you, Jesus, I really want to follow you with all my heart, and I pray you just show me how. And help us, Lord, to build families that are really healthy families where other people can find love and hope and acceptance. In Jesus' name, amen.